KFSR presents First Ladies Focus, the personal stories behind people who love Fresno State. Featuring Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro, and KFSR Program Director, Julie Logan, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning and welcome. I'm Julie Logan, along with my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Good morning, Mrs. Castro.
Good morning, Julie. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks again to everybody who has tuned in or those who are listening via our stream at www.kfsr.org. We're here again this morning with a special guest who I will let you introduce.
Thank you very much. I am so excited to be able to have this guest. I'm honored that she was able to fit this into her schedule, and I have already joked with her about me being one of her biggest fans in the short time that I have met her, and that is Professor Honora Chapman. Thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It is a real honor to be here and a pleasure.
Professor Honora Chapman is a professor of modern and classical languages and literatures and the director of the Smitkamp Family Honors College. She is someone that once you meet her, you will never forget her because she is one of the sweetest, most genuine people that I've had the opportunity of meeting since coming to Fresno State with my husband, President Castro. The first time that I met Honora, and she's given me permission to call her Nora, so I'll do that for now on, was at a campus reception that welcomed Joe and I. And Joe had known her before because she was actually a member of the team that hired Joe and interviewed him. So you were one of the torturers during his interview process.
Huh? Yeah, we tried not to be too mean.
Well, thank you very much for helping be a part of bringing us here to Fresno State. Nora is an internationally recognized expert on the Jewish historian Josephus. Is that the right say to it?
Josephus.
Josephus. Okay. See, she is the expert and I am not. And the first century AD. She has published widely on these topics and presented at numerous international conferences. This scholarly activity has kept her up to date on developments in her field, a knowledge she brings to her teaching. Her commitment to student learning is apparent in her constant effort to innovate and always improve her courses, and be it new topics, new textbooks, new technologies, or new approaches to classroom discussions and interactions. Students recognize her commitment and respond in kind. I'm reading this from a posting that we have at Fresno State that if you Google Honora Chapman, you can read more about her incredible achievements here on the campus. But what I'd really like to do is talk about her personal connection to the Valley and her inspiration to not only study what she does, but to teach it to others. One way that she influenced me in wanting to study classics is because I had the opportunity of crashing a Provost Awards lecture series that she was giving a presentation on. I'd never been to one, and I was expecting it to be a stuffy type of presentation where she would talk about a little paper she had written or something like that, and that it would be, you know, informative, but not really exciting. Wow, did she blow me away. I have never underestimated what I thought something was going to be going in as much as I did with that. You are just incredible, Nora, and I promise the listeners I'm going to give you a chance to talk here because I'll just gush on about you for another 20 minutes. The title of her presentation was All You Need Is Love, and it wasn't about the Beatles. It was about your passion for what you research and the dedication it takes to be at the level that you are. Your vita is 15 pages long, so you have published and studied, and you have the highest level of education in this field. You're really a remarkable educator. But what I liked was that you talked about the personal, that light going on that made classics real for you. And it started with the bedroom you were assigned when you were born.
That is right. I'm one of eight children, number five to be specific. And when my next little sibling, Daniel, number six, was born, I was lucky enough to be moved out of the nursery room, a little closet of a bedroom, into a room with a bookshelf. And the bookshelf contained the family library of children's books. And I fell in love with reading. I learned to read as soon as I saw those books. I went to a nursery school and they taught me to read at the age of three, and that was it. I just read every book on the shelves and I loved them, and they inspired me to want to turn around and even try to teach my younger siblings how to read.
Oh, that's great.
And it was kind of sad. Finally, when number eight was born, I was moved out of that bedroom.
You were bumped.
I was bumped. I was bumped into the back of the house. And
it
was pretty.
Did you take the books with you?
I took a few, but really, I was not supposed to dismantle the library. So I got my new bookshelf, which my son now has in his room.
Oh, I love that. Well, one of the things is that your family was the founders of Chowchilla.
That's correct.
And I love that when you showed the picture that had your grandparents sitting there and that your grandmother, who had went to UC Berkeley and earned her teaching credential in San Jose by riding her horse there from Merced.
That is right.
Wow. That's determination to get a higher education.
Yes. She was one of seven children, and she was born in Merced, and her older sisters also became teachers, and they all rode their horses through Niles Canyon over to the Bay Area to San Jose Normal School, because Fresno Normal didn't exist. There was nowhere to go in higher education back then for teaching. So they went to San Jose. My older great aunt, Miss Jo, was in the 1906 earthquake at San Jose Normal.
Oh.
Yes, that building shook. And, and so my gram graduated from San Jose Normal and came out to the valley, back to the valley, and started teaching in Turlock. And then she got married. And but her sisters continued teaching in Merced Unified for many decades till their retirement.
Now, along with the founding of the school, was she one of the first teachers there? Or what was her role in the founding of the school there in Chowchilla?
At that point, she already had her first baby. And so she helped hire the teachers and set up the staffing for it. And that was sort of her earliest job as a new mother. And so back then, it was very difficult to be a working mom if you had responsibilities at home.
The part of your story that I connected with when you were talking about being put in the room with the books was that you said that you would read to the rhythm of the sewing machine. And my grandmother had the Singer sewing machine that was pedal driven. And I remember listening to the sound of that. And a part of growing up in the valley that I think that kids miss a little bit now is that it was up to us to entertain ourselves.
Absolutely.
Right? We couldn't say we were bored or else you're assigned another chore.
Oh, no joke.
So I know the way I would fit reading in would be, you know, when you got home from school, you had your assigned chores, you did them as fast as you could. I'd go outside and ride my bike until it was dark.
And exactly.
After dinner, you cleaned up the dishes. But after that part was done, that was the prime reading time.
Yes.
Until I fell asleep.
That's right. And my dad would sit at the kitchen table with his books. And we would all sit at the kitchen table with him with our books.
Oh, I love
and it wasn't,
that.
And sometimes we did homework together.
Right.
But other times it was just reading. And then at night, you know, when you were supposed to go to bedtime, we would open our books in bed and sleep. My older sister, Connie, used to sleep with a flashlight. And she would try to read deep
in
into the night.
I got in trouble for a few times of trying to hide that, too. But I love that your parents patterned that having a book in your hand was the thing to do, you know.
That's absolutely right. It is difficult for me to go through the day without something to read at every moment of the day. Like if I'm working out, I'm reading. Everyone knows this. I can't stop reading.
Sure. And it's such a pleasure because I know that for me, reading would just take you to all these different lands. And I read that one of your favorite authors when you were growing up was Helen Keller, and you went through the Nancy Drew books. Helen Keller was my favorite. And I think that part of why I was drawn to her was because of my father being deaf. And I was just so fascinated by her being able to be deaf and blind and to be an author.
Exactly. She was such a hero for me because I was born half blind, only half blind, not fully blind. Mm-hmm. And to see how much she overcame in her own life.
Yes.
And how much she accomplished for other people. Right. It was very humbling because my disability is very minor in comparison.
Sure. But we both had a favorite in Helen Keller. And Nancy Drew, who doesn't like a great mystery?
Oh my gosh. My mother turned me on to her collection of whatever small number of books she had of Nancy Drew's from the early 30s.
Yes.
And I read all those originals. And then I would save up all my work chore money, whatever I did, babysitting or anything, to go buy the Nancy Drew.
The
and I think
one.
They were $1.50.
Oh, I love it.
Which means I'm really old now.
Or you got a great deal. Well, I strongly believe that inspiring children to read at an early age opens up the world to them, and it allows them to see beyond their environment and to have possibilities that they might not get with family experience. And especially for me, we didn't travel much. Okay. So that was my way of traveling. In my mind, I could go to all these different places and
exactly.
see these things. And I liked the fact that when it's reading, you get to develop the picture. It's not someone else's interpretation of it, like when you're watching a show.
Yeah, you exercise your own imagination.
That's right. In your mind's eye, you see all the events unfolding. And though the Thornton Burgess books did have beautiful line drawings of the animals,
yes.
you still had to envision the actions of said animals.
Right.
So you end up creating a forest of creatures in your mind's eye. And that's exciting, especially when you live in suburbia,
right.
where there is not a forest of creatures.
Right. The other part of your story that I liked a lot was when you talked about you were in high school and getting ready to fill out your college applications, and they asked for what your major was going to be, and you didn't know what your major was going to be, and your mom told you you're going to study classics.
Exactly.
Isn't it great how someone else can have that insight? They can look at you and see the pattern of the things that you enjoy. I love that your mom identified that in you.
She figured it out because I was taking Latin in high school thanks to her, because they had given up Latin like many high schools.
Right.
But she went to the principal and begged them to reinstate it because she noticed that I liked that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did try to help my older sister with Latin when I was in sixth grade and she was a sophomore in high school. I kind of did her homework.
Oh,
but
gosh.
But so it was just because she was not seeing the words on the page, and I found it intriguing. So mom noticed that,
mm-hmm.
and she decided that I should learn Latin, and she was the one who knew that that was even a field, classics, whereas I'd never heard of such a thing in four
sure.
years of high school Latin. So that's how it came about
what
that I studied
it. What a great advocate. And what a blessing to have somebody already identify that for you. Because
sure.
I've often thought that when students get to college,
yes.
they don't have a clue what they really want to
no.
major in, you know?
And that's why I tell them, please go to the general catalog, now it's all online,
mm-hmm.
and start reading it. Like,
sure.
And I know that sounds dry, but in truth, the world is in that general
that's
catalog.
It.
We are so blessed at Fresno State with the variety of topics you can study.
Yes.
It is so much more all-encompassing. It is a truly comprehensive university in comparison to many prestigious universities. They lack the ag component, they lack
right.
the health sciences, and therefore our students really do have a rich experience ahead of them
right.
if they look to see what's offered.
That's it.
And then take advantage.
And don't limit themselves by what somebody else has told them
yes.
or maybe just the only things that they've experienced up until that point in their life. There's a big world out there. You know, take that time to look through the catalog and just maybe highlight. Well, now it's online. You don't have to highlight. I'm dating myself too. But but take notes of things that just pique your interest.
Right.
It doesn't have, I especially want students to try things they know nothing
exactly.
about.
Exactly.
Take that class. Because you're going to come across a professor like Nora, who is the expert in that, and she might lead you down a path that you never imagined but yourself, but that could be incredibly fulfilling. That is something about you that whenever you talk about your work or about Fresno State, you're a very happy and fulfilled person. And that's such a blessing, because not many people get to work, go to work every day excited about what they're getting to do. And I get the sense from you that that's how you feel about getting to study classics.
Absolutely. I love teaching my classes, Latin and Greek, and also the humanities classes where we read the Greek and Roman literature in translation. I love this material. And every day I really enjoy going in and tackling a new paradigm of verbs or a new
mm-hmm.
author like Virgil's Aeneid. And the students are, in fact, sort of dubious sometimes. You know,
oh, sure.
After all, these are general education courses. The language
mm-hmm.
and the humanities are in either lower division area C2 or upper division integrated C. So every semester, 3/4 of my load is in general ed, in GE.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I love that because it means that I can, in fact, open people's eyes to material that they didn't imagine would interest them. But
that's
unfortunately,
wonderful.
They have to, quote unquote, take area C2 mm-hmm. and my class fit their schedule.
Sure.
So they happen into these classes oftentimes by accident or simply through scheduling necessities. And it's exciting to see the light go on where they realize, hey, this is fun.
The difference is the instructor. sometimes with these subjects. You can go to a class that you may or may not be interested in the material, and the teacher is who makes the difference. They bring it alive, or they can kill it for you.
That was my experience. The reason I am a professor, and I've told my students this before, is that as an undergraduate, as a junior, I signed up for Byzantine history. Now, who does such a thing? And when I walked in, there were only five of us in the room, and I thought, oh dear, you know, this is not going to be good.
And that was at Stanford?
And that was at Stanford, and in swooped, and I mean swoop, because she wore a cape year-round. And she swooped in the room, Professor Sabina McCormick, a brand new junior faculty member, and this was her first class.
Oh my gosh.
And when she opened her mouth to speak, we were amazed.
Lucky
and
you.
We were transfixed by her.
Yes.
And all of us, all five of us, became PhDs in history or classics, which is unheard of because normally Stanford students want to go off into business or law or something more practical. But instead, we were so transfixed by her that she so profoundly transformed all of us that we wanted to really, we aspired to be as smart as she was, to be as articulate as she was, and to love it as much as she did because she did. And we fell in love with a course reader that literally, and I still have it on my shelf, each quarter of 10 weeks stood over a foot high.
Wow.
And instead of it being 8.5 by 11, she Xeroxed it on 11 by 17 sheets. And this is back when
it was still that high.
She pieced together the course readers. That's how much she loved it. And she illustrated it because she was an artist. And, you know, when someone loves it that much.
Wow. Talk about going above
and
beyond.
Well, that's how much you love it. That's how I felt when I listened to you. The same thing. I was blown away by, I loved how, and we will give the link to this presentation that she did on the website for KFSR so that you'll have the opportunity to go to it and read every part of it. But there's a part here where you connect modern day language and modern day phrases and writing to ancient Latin and Greek that you've studied. And I think that if someone reads something today, they think, oh, this is the original idea. But I love how you had that connection that this has been said before.
Oh,
and
yes.
This is who did it. And this is what they meant. That was a fantastic part of your PowerPoint for me.
Thank you. And what people don't realize is that it's even in the more boring texts, such as Euclid's Elements, which in fact was a textbook of geometry up until even into the 20th century, even though we've moved beyond just Euclidean geometry as a field of study, still he laid the groundwork for how you think about mapping the universe. And that's just fascinating. And along with Archimedes, you have two geniuses who made those kinds of contributions to human thought that are thousands of years old before the birth of Christ. These two men were developing these ideas. And there were women involved too. And my late antique hero is Hypatia, who in fact learned geometry and mathematics from her father in Alexandria, Egypt. And she edited Euclid's Elements. And I believe that's the text that we now have with us is the Elements as she managed to edit them. They did unfortunately kill her for her knowledge.
I remember you saying that.
And yet she was so brilliant that everybody wanted to learn from her. And so there are models for both women and men about how to aspire to higher thought and how to contribute to your field. It really matters that we each try to do this.
Yes.
Whether as students or as faculty, as professors, researchers. And I think what's special about Fresno State is that we have professors who try very hard to get their students involved in research as undergraduates. And I'm really impressed as director of the Honors College, the Smickham Family Honors College, I'm really impressed by the laboratory research that our students do with the biology and physics and chemistry professors, et cetera, and in engineering as well. But also in the humanities you see, and the arts, you see professors engaging their students in their own work so that they learn how to become a professional while they're still here with us as undergraduates.
Yes.
And that prepares them for amazing work ahead. Our students go on straight into doctoral programs.
That's wonderful.
Because of the fact that they've learned to work with the Chuck Chansey language and linguistics as juniors and seniors, and they've even delivered papers and published articles. And this happens across all the fields on campus, this kind of engagement. So it is is not just a throwaway phrase that we use on this campus.
Right.
Engagement is both giving out to the community through community service, but also intellectual engagement with our students.
And that's the one of the ways that you inspire them. I know that you travel quite a bit in your research, and you have taken students on trips.
We
Tell
did.
Tell us a little bit more about that, because I think that that is a way that connects a student on the soil of what they've only read about in a book. What does that feel like?
It's just magical, because I taught an honors Latin class back in 2010. And at that time, I promised the students, we will go to Rome.
Oh, wow.
And so
what a motivator.
I had them doing projects basically on Roman monuments. And I said, and we will go see them.
Oh.
So in the summer of 2012, in May to June, I and my colleagues, Christy Easton, professor of classics and humanities, and her husband Curtis Easton, who also teaches Greek and humanities, and the former director of the Smickham Family Honors College, the founder of it, Robert Ware. We all went with these students, and we had 24 Fresno State students.
Wow. That's a trip of a lifetime.
Yes.
For
it
those
was
students.
So much fun. And we both tromped through all the sites in Rome itself. And we also took a bus trip down to Pompeii and went to the Naples Archaeological Museum, which is just filled with priceless relics of the whole Vesuvius area, because when Vesuvius blew in AD 79, it covered not just Pompeii, but also Herculaneum and all these villas by the seashore that were so beautiful. It was like the Malibu of Italy.
Oh my goodness.
And so the art in them is now in Naples. But people are scared to go to Naples because it is heavy in drug trafficking and all. But I said, we have to go. And we did. And it was so much fun. It was an adventure, actually.
It sounds like it.
And we really had a wonderful trip where 24 students got to do something that they sincerely had never done before.
Right.
And it's
they probably wouldn't have had the opportunity if it wasn't for you knowing exactly where to go and the way that you inspired them to want to see it.
We'd like to go.
Well, you know,
right. I saw pictures and I was thinking, now that it looks like a fantastic trip, because it didn't look like it was a sightseeing trip. It looked like, I mean, here they are with you and the other experts that can tell you more about what you're seeing. Plus, they'd already studied.
Talk about the ultimate tour guides.
Right. They were prepared to experience it on a level that nobody else was getting while they were there.
Yeah. Curtis and Christy and I, really, we were tag teaming it and having so much fun. And what's beautiful about having so many professors at once is that one or two of them can be stepping to the side to talk with students individually while the main person is talking about the monument you're staring at the moment. And therefore, there's that personal connection while there's a group activity going on.
Yes.
It makes all the difference. Also, corralling 24 people on the mean streets of Rome is
very seriously difficult
walking from point A to point B at times. So that was essential to have people at the front of the line and the back of the line on the narrow sidewalk going from one place to another.
And when you got back, did you notice the impact that that trip had on the students?
Yes. As I've seen with students who have gone on the wonderful London mini semesters and the trip to Finland with Chris Clark and their myriad opportunities at Fresno State, they mature because they live in an apartment where they have to cook for themselves. They do
They're not in the real world.
They are not fed by someone else. They have to go to the grocery, not the grocery store, not the supermarket, but the little store at the end of the block. That sells food in a language they don't speak.
Wow.
And we tried to teach them certain phrases to help them get along. Mm-hmm. But in truth, they loved conquering their fear and conquering the situation. And they are more confident when they return. 3 weeks is enough if you have to feed yourself to grow up in a certain sense, because you find yourself thrown on your own resources. And it's not America. You can't speak Italian. None of the students except one had had Italian.
Oh.
And therefore, they really were winging it.
Well, that was brave on their part.
It was.
To really just go for it.
They did it, but then they ended up throwing dinner parties for each other. It was so funny. And we would hear about it afterwards, that they were up having a grand old time making bruschetta and all these wonderful dishes. And they had a great time.
Thank you so much, Nora, for coming in and for sharing this insight into your field and into what motivates you and the way that you give back to students. I'd like for us to end this by you having the opportunity to talk about your husband, Bill, who's also a professor here at Fresno State, and about your son, Will. I know that in order for someone to be able to work at the level that you do and to be able to give as much as you do and to be the professional that you are, you have to have the support of someone who gives you that confidence that it's okay to have that time and put that much energy towards something so incredible as your career. And if you could talk a little bit about how Bill supports you.
He supports me immensely because Bill, being a professor of history, knows what it takes to teach a 4-4 load.
Yes.
And he is a fabulous professor. He is so attentive to his students, and he works so hard the night before, always preparing, re-preparing his lectures.
Wonderful.
If people only knew. And so basically we work together. We have a schedule that in many respects mirrors one another's because of the similarity of the type of preparation that we do for each day of teaching. And
That's a great asset for both of you.
Exactly.
It creates a kind of understanding that is very difficult for someone from the outside to really deal with.
Sure.
Because the amount of time and effort it takes to redo things over and over again. We never settle for what we did the previous year. And I had the immense pleasure of teaching with him a class in honors for 5 straight years called Honors 101, and it covers 20 centuries of history.
Oh my goodness.
And it is a fantastic run through the development of Christianity from the first century to 21st century Latin America. And it takes stops from Judea to Rome to Spain to Latin America. And he's a Latin American historian, and therefore it was the perfect blending.
I want to sign up for that.
Imagine being that student who gets to watch you and your husband tag team teach them.
Where do we sign up?
We had so much fun teaching it. I think we should teach it as a regular class in the future because it was such a delight working with him and to research the syllabus with him and then to perform it with the students, and the student feedback was really positive.
What an opportunity for both of you as professionals and as a husband and wife to get to work together like that.
Oh, it was a hoot. And he was supportive when I thought of becoming the director of the Smith Camp Family Honors College. He was my strongest supporter in that. And he understood what it took because he had been the assistant director from 2006 to 2007. And so
he knew what you were getting into.
He did. And he was chair of history from 2009 to just this past May. And so he understood the administrative side of life as well. And so
that sounds wonderful. How does your son Will, how incredible for a kid to grow up in this environment where you've got two parents who are these fantastic historians. Does Will have an interest in history?
He does. As a matter of fact, he was a history major here at Fresno State. He can't escape it. And he grew up loving all eras of history. He had a lot of books to read on it.
We did travel.
I tried very hard to take him to places that he could see with his own eyes, whether it was Peru, after we were inspired by Bill's book on Peru, and we went, or to Italy or Spain.
A lucky kid.
Yeah, I told him so. And he loves history, but now he loves a certain type of history that was introduced to him by Gary Rice in MCJ here at Fresno State. He did the oral histories of the Central California war veterans. And by doing that and learning the technique from Dr. Rice, he decided to study it further in graduate school. And he is currently a master's student at Columbia University doing oral history in particular. And because he wants to do something that will have meaning for the Central Valley in Fresno,
yes,
he wants to do his thesis work on old downtown Fresno and to do oral histories of people. So anyone out there who would like to be interviewed, please email later, because he really wants to construct a picture from the memories of Fresno natives or people who moved here many years ago. He wants to construct a picture of what life was like then, as Fresno tries to reimagine its downtown in order to make it even more successful. And so he figures that's just one small way to contribute to the community.
So he's taking up the family business.
Sort of. No one would foist it on him. If he wants to do something else when he's done with his master's, which
that's
he probably
wonderful.
Does, he has many plans. He's been talking to friends.
How exciting for you to see him mature into that. And like you said, he developed a focus and a certain certain area, to hear how he is narrowing his focus.
Yes.
Like watching the bird go out of the nest, right?
That's right. I mean, especially since he went to Fresno State, though he did live in the dorms, mm-hmm. I did see him a lot. And mm-hmm. therefore, it is nice to see that he can go to New York City and survive the strange weather.
That's wonderful. And you told me earlier that you keep in touch with all your brothers and sisters. You're still very yes. close with each other.
Yes.
I think that's wonderful because it's a big part of staying grounded and staying connected is having that family network.
I agree.
You're very fortunate to have that.
Very lucky. We had amazing parents who created that loving environment where we actually really care for each other deeply and we don't have those family divisions that unfortunately some people have to experience. Mm-hmm. Instead, we support each other and we have wonderful email chains because we do live in California, all of us, and yet still we live in different parts of the state. Yes. Many are in Southern California, but I'm in the Central Valley and my brother Daniel's up in Northern California. And therefore, email helps.
Right.
But family holidays help more.
Oh, sure. And nothing replaces being face to face with the people you love.
Exactly. And then the children of your siblings as well.
Right. Just watching the family get bigger and bigger. Huh?
Exactly. Exactly. And watching them grow up is so it's fascinating because you can see your siblings in their children.
Right. Thank you so much for taking the time to be here today. I really appreciate it. And, you know, we could go on and on, but I have enjoyed having this time with you and getting to hear more about your story. And thank you for sharing it with the community.
So inspirational.
Thank you.
Truly. Professor Chapman, we have, I believe, all of your contact information posted on the KFSR Facebook page. But if you'd like to mention any now, please do.
Yes, you can reach me at my office phone number for the Smitkamp Family Honors College at 559-278-8160. Or you may email me at hchapman, C-H-A-P-M-A-N, at csufresno.edu.
And Mrs. Castro, we've had some emails at the radio station and some phone calls about how people might be able to reach you as well. So how would you like listeners to contact you?
They can contact me through the station or they can send an email directly to me at macastro@csufresno.edu.
Well, thanks again to our very special guest, Professor Honora Chapman, and of course, my co-host, Fresno State's First Lady, Mrs. Mary Castro. Thanks for joining us this morning. Please join us again next Sunday morning at 10 for another First Ladies Focus on KFSR. We're on the air at 90.7 FM and streaming worldwide at www.kfsr.org.
KFSR presents First Ladies Focus every Sunday morning at 10. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.